episode of Conversation is supported by the generous donations of Klaus Schwab. You can support us too at truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link. Hello, everybody. This is Verilicious, and you are in the fitting room with Verilicious, and it is the 4th of February, 2025. And today we have a special guest, and he's from Central Washington in the United States, and it is Resmat Jeff. Hello, Resmat Jeff.
Hi, Verilicious.
And what are we up to today, Resmat? Did you work today?
I was on. I had to take care of a few things, and then I'm back to work tomorrow for a couple weeks, and then I got some time off.
Beautiful. And what are you planning on doing on your time off?
I just got a few DIY projects. You know, I live in an old house, constantly fixing stuff. The house actually belonged to my grandparents.
Beautiful, beautiful. So a bit of a flip it. Or is it going to be like a renovation nightmare?
Like a constant reclamation project.
Yeah, perfect. That's good. And so Central Washington, I don't think I've actually been to Central Washington. I have been to the States. Now, I've seen photos of where you live. It looks so beautiful. I think you've had one photo with your dogs there with the mountains in the background. Tell me, like, is it farmland? Like, what land is it? It seems really beautiful where you are.
There's a lot of farmlands, a lot of orchards. It's pretty diverse. I mean, that's what's the great part about living here is that, I mean, the mountains, the beach, and the desert are all within, like, the same state with driving distance. And
wow. How far away are you from the beach?
Probably about 3 hours, because I got to go over a mountain pass.
Oh, I've seen that mountain pass, because you get snow there as well, don't you?
Yeah, the Cascades, they're no joke. They get a lot of snow in the winter. And there's three mountain passes there, and I live on the eastern side of the Cascades.
Oh, so you might get some beautiful sunsets. No, sunrises. That would be correct, wouldn't it?
We get a lot of sun over here. It's characterized as think of like New Mexico, but like cold. That's similar to kind of like where I'm at.
Beautiful. Desert. But you get a little bit of both because it's desert. Yeah, that's right. So would you get the extreme heat? I mean, I know in Queensland we experience extreme heat to cool, not cold. I mean, Queenslanders think that 20 degrees is freezing cold, Celsius I'm talking about, but it's still actually quite warm. Yeah. What's it like for you there? Does it drop to significant temperatures?
It can. It depends. Like, last couple of years, we've had pretty dry, cold winters. It doesn't get super cold, actually, for as far north as we are. That's why it's so good for agriculture.
Yeah,
we
don't
get a ton of moisture either. That's why we have to have, irrigation systems.
And that's something that you've got on your... I'm going to say it's a farm that you've got, isn't it? We can describe it as a farm?
Yeah, it's small. Yeah, ranch, whatever. It's about 3.5 acres. And it's just mostly, I don't grow anything really except for a small garden. It's mostly just cow pastures.
Oh, beautiful. It's beautiful. So you've got, what do you do? So you are a farrier. So I've got a few people that will be listening in that probably like, what is she talking about? Why is she asking this guy stuff? It's a farrier is it's a combination of blacksmith and a veterinarian, right? So you take care of horses, obviously. But let us know what it is exactly, Resma.
Well, it's a focus like on foot care. It depends on like how you're using your horse. Like a lot of horses that are just like in soft pens or pastures where there's not a lot of rock, just trim. Because the way the horse's foot is designed, they're designed to in nature to large distances to get to food and water. And by domesticating them, they don't really do that. So they don't wear their feet off and break them off like they would in nature. So human intervention is required. And if you're going to be using your horse, riding in areas, see, in nature, they would just avoid like a lot of like these rocky areas. But if you're using your horse for work, like you have to go up into the mountains to like gather cows. Or if you're just like a pleasure rider who wants to go on mountain trails where there's rocks, they need some kind of protection. And like that's where putting steel shoes on comes in.
Does that hurt them in any way? I mean, I've seen over time, like we've been to farms and so forth. We have tours when you're a kid, you get to go to see the farm animals and stuff like that. And you get to see the horses and then the horseshoe and stuff like that. But does something like that hurt them? When you put them on?
You're driving the nails into dead tissue.
Right.
It's like if you let your fingernail grow out and then you like put like a nail through like the dead part of it. So it's just think of that like scaled up essentially.
Right. Yeah. And so that
through the consistency of the tissue is like how you tell like how close you're getting to the live tissue. So as like your first thing you do is you clean the foot out after you pull the old shoe off, and then you have like a specialized knife. There's several different variations of it where you're taking what is the sole, the very bottom of the foot. You take that, you're taking the dead stuff out. You can tell by the consistency of it, like what's as you're getting close to live. And as you're getting closer to live tissue, you start to back off, and then you can see lines in the foot, and that's going to tell you how much to trim off of the heel, the quarters, and the toes.
Right. So horses get pedicures as well, and they get beautiful shoes. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's over time because horses are a big part of history, a big part of people's history. I mean, here in Australia, we had the drovers. We had it in the early part. We've got the jackaroos and, the guys that drive all the cattle runs and all that kind of stuff. And horseback was quite popular here as well. And they used a lot, aren't they? Like domestically, they used a lot for a lot of work as well. So are you using your horses for a lot of work?
Well, you have a lot of cattle farming down there. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's good for cattle farming because, especially in our region, because where a lot of the cows get turned out to pasture, it's pretty rough terrain where you can't even get to with an ATV. You literally have to have a horse to get to some of these places. I mean, you can't get there with ATVs even.
And with your cattle, like, do you breed them is it for food or do you do dairy? Like what's your cattle used for mainly?
There are dairies here, but the ones that get turned out in like public lands to graze, like they're beef cattle.
Oh, okay. So I only ask because I mean, I used to eat meat and then I went a little bit vegetarian. I have a love for animals and sometimes it's very hard, to face that sort of stuff. And then it's like you realize that, our dietary requirements are a little bit different and it's okay. Animals are used for agriculture and we do need them for food and all that kind of stuff. It's not a bad thing. But yeah, I do love the cows. I think they're very curious animals. They're super cute. Super cute. I know they're very curious animals as well. I know whenever our dog goes up near farmlands, he just gets so scared of them, so he starts barking, but the cows get more curious, so they come up a bit closer to him and they want to know why he's barking. Mm-hmm. It's so cute. Yeah. Are you finding that they're curious animals as well? Like, you must be an animal person, because I have seen you with your dogs. You talk about your dogs, and you have, I can see that you have a love for your animals as well. You've put some pictures up that we've seen as well. So yeah, tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah, I'm definitely an animal lover, and actually the only cow we have right now, because like the one we raised for beef, we butchered last fall, is one that we had got, and she just never grew. She was like a hybrid, and she's actually blind in one eye, and she was never going to grow big enough to eat, so we just have her as a pet. So it seems like a contradiction, is that like, oh, okay, that's kind of weird, like being like a lot of people like from like the metropolitan areas and stuff, they struggle to like put their head around that duality of like, oh, I love my animals, they're like my family, but also like I understand like there's certain ones that are designated to like kill and eat, and I don't have a problem doing that just because like that's how I grew up seeing it since I was a young kid. So I wouldn't say I'm desensitized to it. It's not easy, but it's just something that
that we do.
It's just part of being my life. My culture, my lifestyle, whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I remember we used to have chickens and Dad was the same. So it was fine for me as a child, but it affected my brother so much that he couldn't eat chicken for a very long time, right up into his adulthood. It was a traumatizing thing for him because he had a love for animals as well. But I can see it is a hard thing to do. I really have to applaud people that can do that. You know, it must be a very, very hard business, especially if you care for the animals yourself and you know. And but we understand how that works. Yeah. So what's your background, Resma Jeff? I have heard that you've got a bit of an Indigenous background. Oh, let us know after the break.
No matter what you say,
you're listening to another conversation,
or your preoccupation,
on truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now on with the conversation.
The art of conversation.
Welcome back to In the Fitting Room with Verilicious. It is the 4th of February 2025. And today we're in the fitting room with Resma Jeff. I haven't decided how I'm going to style him today. I don't know whether you want some cowboy boots today, Resma, or would you like some chaps even? But let's go back to what I was going to ask you about your cultural background. So you have a cultural background, I know. I have heard you talk about it before. So let us know a little bit about that.
Okay, well, I live on an Indian reservation, but I'm not part of it. And I have some Indian roots going back on my great-grandmother and great-grandfather's side. They came from Kansas originally during the Depression. And it was just kind of an area where, they were true frontier people, like their families. And it was just not uncommon to mix with the Indigenous. And on both sides, they did. So I have a little bit from them.
Nice. And so what have you learned? Like, have you picked up some of the traditions and some of the cultures from back then? Or do you think that generation by generation, it's sort of been filtered out a lot?
I think it's pretty much personally was assimilated out, but I'm around it a lot. I have a lot of Native friends around here. I don't have like a direct like personal connection to like any of the traditions, but I grew up around it.
And growing up around it, how did you feel? Like, do you believe that sort of thing can shape a person in ways of appreciating certain things that you do?
I think it's I think it was it for lives around here. I think it is good that they have like a connection to their culture. They seem the ones that they do. They seem to be like more well adjusted. They have less like the typical problems that tribal members do, and they have a lot. But it seems like the ones that like they maintain that connection to be a little bit more like successful, functional.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Like how society and the economic developments can affect certain people and certain cultural people as well. And I mean, we think about the back in the days, even when I was younger, probably not so much now, you would say it, but you know, I guess the cowboys and Indians was such a popular thing. You know, the boys, someone wanted to be a cowboy, someone wanted to be Indian, and the biggest thing I know in television for a lot of my generation of kids as well, when I was a child, we used to love the Lone Ranger, and the fact that he had his, you know, his offsider was Indian, and it was just, and we didn't think about all that stuff back then. Like there was no division of anything, right? Because today we have a lot of division. Like my mother, she's dark, she's Malaysian. My father is basically white, he's Italian, but we're all Australian. And I remember growing up, there's a lot of like, oh, your mom is so dark, or, you know, it would be, how are you, a halfie, and all that kind of stuff. Now, you know, exposed to that when you are like a preteen in school can be quite confronting for a lot of children, right? And this is what I'm saying, like all these things can either shape you as you grow up. And I love the fact that we have cultural diversity in my family. And it's massive. And the fact that we can share all these things in generation to generation. And then we can always take it back and like remember what your grandparents did and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, do you feel like that as well? Because obviously there's a big cultural diversity for you as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting you say bring up cowboys, because like half of the cowboys that I know around here are Indian.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely both sides of my family have been pretty good about like our families all the way back as far as we can. And it makes living in like a culturally diverse area, it's not as problematic, I guess. I don't know. There is so many, like there are a few, like there is quite a bit of mixing, even like in like within like the Yakima tribal members. I only think you have to be like one eighth to be like a registered tribal member. So even they're mixed a lot, even though they're kind of like their own group.
Yeah. And is there a lot of what you call tribes? Because when I think about the things that we've seen in documentaries and stuff like that, America had quite a few tribes there, not only from. But where did that come from? Like, did they migrate from anywhere, or what? How did that start? Because I'll give you an example. Just because they say that the Aborigines versus Aboriginal people of Australia may have migrated from like parts of Indonesia and Southeast Asia and so forth, and over time, you know what I mean? They evolved and changed culturally, and they became like certain tribes and stuff like that. Is that the same? Do you think that's the same? Because I find that some of the can I use the word Native American and the Icelandic indigenous people, I should say, they look very similar. Yeah. Do you think there was a migration from certain places?
Yeah, probably. They do look a lot like people from like the steppes, especially the ones over here. They look very similar to the the American Indians in like Alaska and Canada. They look totally different than the ones from the Plains. Like the Plains Indians, they appear to be like they're from like a different group or some kind of like offshoot. They have very different like physical features. And I can tell you specifically about, if you want me to talk about the ones that like live where I do on the reservation that I am, like I can give you a little bit about their history.
Yeah, that'll be nice because it's nice to learn about different cultures. I find it exciting because of the cultural diversity in my own family and friends. And I think a lot of it comes from the love of food with us as well, and the love that we love celebrating certain things as well. And just having that diversity gives us a little bit more variety in life and celebrations that we enjoy together. So, yeah, let us know a little bit about that, because there's a lot of people that don't know, you know. And like I said, we only see what's generally put in front of us and what we see on that television, which, you know, may or may not be true half the time because it's pretty much exaggerated these days.
Yeah. Well, essentially, the tribe that's on the reservation where I live, they're a confederation of different smaller bands. And they became a confederated band after pretty much like the Midwest Indian Wars were over and the Oregon Territory was getting integrated into the United States. A guy named Chief Yakima, who wasn't even, Yakima is the name of the tribe, and it's because they're confederate of bands. He organized them into a tribe so basically they could cut like a better deal with the U.S. government. And so they have like the biggest reservation in Washington State. You can look it up. It's the Yakima Indian Reservation.
Right. So there you go, folks, if you want to have a look at that. Yakima, did you say it was the Indian Reservation? Yeah, so in ways of cutting deals, I know the Aborigines have done stuff like that here too in Australia, but what do they do? Like, is there businesses that they create? Are they farmers? They obviously run specific businesses as well. Do they have like certain grants from the government? How does it work?
Well, basically, they don't have to pay any taxes at all as long as they conduct their business like on the reservation. So a lot of them have started, some of them are cattle farmers. Some of them are loggers. There is some logging still. Like a lot of the logs have been regulated out of the state, but because it's on tribal land, there is still some tribal logging operations. They didn't really have an aptitude for or any desire to learn how to farm, like either fruit or grain or hay. It's something that they either didn't want to or didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't. So what they do is like they leased to farmers of European descent, you know, predominantly Germans. They came out here like from the Midwest, like, and that's my my great grandparents. That's where they came out, and back in Eastern Washington too. Excuse me. And so the tribe also generates money through leases.
Oh right, property. Yeah, bit of money to be made in property. That's for sure. Especially if you've got a lot of land as well.
Fishing. Yeah. Salmon fishing is really big too. Like that's a big, they both commercial fishing and just for themselves. There's a lot of salmon in the Yakima River, Columbia River that they have rights to.
That's really good that you can get fresh fish, because most of the time when people think about salmon, they're farmed and they're grown in tanks and stuff like that, and it's not very nice. But the fresher, obviously, the fresher it is, the better it is. We do recommend the fishermen's co-op here, where we live in the Gold Coast. It's just because we know that the fishing boats go out, they come in, and you can actually buy direct from the fishermen's co-op, which is so much better than, say, going to the fishmongers or the local supermarket where everything's frozen, you know, and you don't actually know where half that stuff comes from because it could come from Asia. It could have been sitting on a boat for with that stuff on ice for weeks, you know. So, it's good to hear that a lot of the fresh stuff, because, like, how do you feel about, like, because I love to eat as fresh as possible. And, you know, just health-wise, just when you think about yourself, how you want to try and be as healthy as possible, and there's so much junk going on at the moment, and we hear there's lots of plastics turning up in our food, there's lots of pesticides, you know, food can't even be grown without some sort of poison and stuff like that. Like, what do you think about all that? Like, what do you do?
I can see, I try to see it from both sides of also, like, I agree with that, a lot of that stuff, and we should try to do that as much as possible. But I also look at it from, like, I see it from the practical side and just historical side of famines that used to happen in the past in human history. They don't happen anymore. And part of the reason is it's a bit of a trade-off. It's like, yeah, we use chemical fertilizers now to grow vegetables, but we don't have starvations like on the levels that we used to either. So I try.
Yeah, which is interesting.
I think that, like, you know, you have to, like, I think you just have to be, try to eat as, like, healthy as possible and with as little, use as little pesticides and artificial stuff as possible. But at the same time, just realistically, I think sometimes people, they underrate the benefit of, like, of ending, like, those mass famines that, like, we used to have in human history.
Yeah, so was that something that your grandparents experienced? Was that you talking about that time?
Yeah, yeah. They during the Depression, yeah, there's all sorts of crazy, like, stories that they had from, because they were right in the heart of the Dust Bowl there in Kansas, and all of the environmental, like, disaster of that going. You know, it's an area where there's a lot of tornadoes too, so that was a regular part of existence too. So. Yeah, when they came out here, it looked like paradise to them, even though they had to, you know, they were constantly working.
Yeah.
My great-grandmother worked at, she worked in a meatpacking place for a while, and my great-grandfather worked as a butcher, and then they started their own leather business, actually, pack, because my grandpa had horses. And my grandmother actually worked in that too. She made, like, bells, chaps, that kind of stuff.
Oh, beautiful. That's so nice. So do you work with leather yourself, or it's not something you're into?
I can do a few simple things. My dad is better at it. And it's interesting because, like, it was actually my great-grandfather. He passed away in 2003, and we still find stuff that he made that, like, people had used around the area that he'd sold. And if they got rid of their animals, got old and died, or they're just getting out of it and they want to sell, like, their tack, we've been kind of, like, gathering it up and buying it just so we can have all the stuff that he made.
Beautiful. Did they have a business? Like, is there something that I've got people that are listening to at the moment, they're just messaging me saying they're loving listening to you. But is there somewhere that they can look online to see some of the work, the leather work, or it wasn't available?
No. This was before then. I mean, they've been gone for some time. Like I said, my great-grandfather passed. We still actually have all of his tools and stuff and a lot of the materials, and we can do stuff for us because we still have horses and it's nice to be able to repair your tack and saddles. But my dad will, like, if, like, weather gets really bad, sometimes my dad will go in the shop. We have a small leather shop that will he'll if the weather gets really bad during the winter and he gets really bored, he'll go in and work on stuff. But he hasn't really built anything big, like a saddle or anything like that, in a few years. But he can.
That's good. That's really good skills to have. I worked with a bit of leather a few years ago, and we were in New York, and I went to a flea market, and I saw people had notebooks and stuff, and I just fell in love with this leather bound covers and stuff like that. And I thought, why not? I've got a skill in making like textiles background. And I thought, I've never worked with actual leather. So when I came back to Australia, I got a big piece. I went to a, what are they called? Where the place where you buy all your leathers wholesale.
Like and you could buy big,
tannery type. And you could just go and pick the size that you want. And you obviously pay for however they work out the price for it was. And so I just got the big piece, and then I started designing up some patterns, and I started making like little covers for notebooks. So I just went and bought some plain notebooks, and then I thought, I'm going to see how I can actually design a cover for it. So I did a few of those. I also did little like wallets, so like card wallets, so you can just pop your cards in. And I think a couple of the pieces I did was also some like bags, like ladies, like clutch, little clutch bags and stuff as well. And I did everything by hand. Yeah, everything by hand. So I had all the leather, I believe I still have the leather tools as well. I was using the leather like a string, you know, instead of using particular thread. Yeah. I'm using leather, like leather thread and all that kind of stuff. And I'll tell you what, it definitely is hard work, but definitely satisfying when you actually come up with a product. And, I haven't done it in a while, but I do have a few pieces somewhere floating around somewhere. And I know my family's probably kept a few pieces when I was working on them as well. But yeah, it's something really good and exciting when you can do that, you know, because I think a lot of the skills now are lost. And if anything was to happen, especially when it comes down to, you think about society and what's happening today. I mean, we're relatively, we'll find out in a minute.
No matter what your age,
you're listening to Conversation
or your affiliation
on truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage.
And now, back to the conversation.
In the art of conversation.
We're in the fitting room with Verilicious and Res Mart Jeff today. It is the 4th of February 2025. We're just talking a bit about leather and working with leather. So making stuff, people don't have the skills these days. Like when you think about the type of practical skills, most of the time you'll see people will have more, like skills will be more into the computers. Everyone's on their phones these days. Everyone's sitting in an office, and you don't actually find them really doing much with their hands anymore. Are you finding that, Jeff?
Yeah, that's true. It's more difficult because I remember when I was a kid and my great grandma, my great grandpa were running their leather shops. There was other competitors, and I remember around the time that they passed away that they were some of the last ones. And now there's probably only two or three places that, like, if you really needed like heavy leather work done, that would be able to do it. And so, yeah, it's definitely, I've seen a decline in it.
Yeah, and you've also heard about like how fast fashion is taking over things these days, which includes like leather goods. I think it shocked me when I had a friend, he worked for Gucci, and he was telling me that the way they work some of the leather stuff was that it was the Chinese were salting it so that it would cure a lot faster, and then they would be pumping the goods out of a factory in China. And I was like, but they were able to keep, you know, inherit like a brand name and keep the prices that they did. And I'm like, that's not good. Like, people are expecting quality and things to last, you know. I feel like when that sort of thing happens, you feel like you've been cheated out of something. But then you look at the way society is today, right? Now, I work for a company. They still make stuff here in Australia. And it is a little bit expensive, but you're getting good quality things that are actually made here. And it's really hard to find like Australian made these days because everything comes out of China or India or Turkey or wherever. And some of the Australian companies do own factories offshore. That's not an issue because of how the tariffs worked here. But the quality you find is going to be completely different, right? So, I mean, we've had, oh, but your stuff is so expensive. And it's like, our stuff is expensive because you're paying for something that's going to last you longer. You can pay for the same thing made in China or of inferior quality, like, material. You know, and people don't see that. They don't make that connection, you know, just because this brand name is whatever it is. And it's like, yeah, that's great. But have a look at where it's made. I mean, I would rather pay, you know, $180 for something that's made really well, good quality, with quality fabrics made in my local country, than I would pay for something that I know that's been cheaply made and cheaply done and done in a way offshore where it's more quantity rather than quality, and the fact that they're not treating the staff very well either. You know, we hear a lot of terrible stories about all those things and factories and stuff like that from overseas. Yeah. So, that's why I think there's a lot of skill that's being lost these days. And, you know, in you having the skill as a farrier, we don't meet those here, you know. We do have the cowboys here in Queensland, and we do have farms here in Queensland. I've met a few cattle farmers and stuff like that here. They're so down to earth guys. And girls, you know, and they just work really hard. They work really hard, and the land is pretty harsh, like you say. It can be you're going through extreme weather temperatures as well. But they work hard for what they believe in as well. And you know, God love them for it. I think it's good. But I think the way of the world today, especially city, when you look at all the cities, people are just getting affected by what's going on around them. There's so much more, I'm going to say it's propaganda, because we don't really know 100% what's true and what's not. And we're just getting so influenced by everything that's happening around us, we don't even stop to think. Like, you know, you can stop to think. You've got this, you can go outside and you can just take yourself away from it. And we can do the same here. We're basically regional here in Queensland. The Gold Coast is basically considered regional Queensland, even though we are beachside. But, you know, the best thing about what we can do is we can actually tear ourselves away. We've lived in a big city. We understand how the ways of the cities work. And it's, we're glad to sort of be out of it. And you've got time to actually, you know, smell the roses. Like, you've got time to actually kick back and think about your life and do all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So tell us your plan for your, for flipping the house. What are your plans on doing?
I don't really have any plan. Well, for one thing, I don't live by myself, so I have to ask my brother. My little brother lives here too.
Right.
But just to fix it up, and like, that was one thing that my great-grandfather was always like, he's the one who originally bought this piece of land, and he was always real adamant that it needed to stay in the family. And housing prices and land prices, I mean, like, property taxes have gone up ridiculous amounts. Washington is an incredibly expensive state to live. And we could probably sell, and then my family could probably sell and move out of state and live a lot cheaper. But it's hard because we've been here for generations. My family's here, and I know that it was really important to him that, like, we have a piece of land to, like, call our own. Like, that was always, like, really important to him.
Yeah, I find that generational. That's what families are like. Yeah. My parents are like that as well. Like they've got a house. They renovated it. It's on a good block of land. They've been offered like quite a fair bit. But mum and dad are like, no, we're going to die here. Like this is the family home. Like we're not going anywhere. We're not going to sell up. And you kids, like after we go, you can do whatever you want with it. But you know, having that family home, it's always good to, I always find it nice to go back home. That's what I say. And it's nice to come back home, catch up with your family. You know, mum's always putting on a feast or something like that. And it sort of, it brings you back, you know, and I feel like there's not a lot of that happening these days. Do you find that there's not a lot of that happening these days? Because a lot of families have been divided and there's been a lot of division in ways of our family life.
Yeah, it's like a lot of social commentators, podcasters, they talk about like how culture and propaganda is used to like break up the modern, like the nuclear family. But like the nuclear family is like, that's a relatively recent invention. And it's actually like the extended family, like being close to them and living in the same area. And like, you know, if we need to get together and like build a road or something like that, like it was not a problem because like you basically had like a whole army behind you because like your whole extended family could work together. You could pool all of them together and get stuff done, and like that's kind of gone by the wayside.
Exactly. And how exciting was that at the times when you could do that, you know, where the family would go out and do something together and then they'd have a feast, they'd have all their family, extended family and friends come together. I remember we used to have big feasts with the families when I was a kid, and I kind of missed that growing up, you know, because just things happen and in people's lives, and we don't have that anymore. I know my brother tries to keep that together, especially around particular holidays and events we tend to get together. I remember when I went back to visit my family after my dad had a heart attack in August last year, and he just said, right, that weekend everybody went down to, he's got a holiday house, and we all went down there and it just had a big feast. And my sister-in-law, she makes her own food. My niece, she's really great at cooking as well. And they had everything prepared and it was just great. And they have gardens and stuff. They make their own. So they make their own pasta. So my brother, we're half Italian. So my brother actually married an Italian woman. So my sister-in-law, she's full Italian, but comes with the traditions behind it as well. So, you know, she was taught by her mother, and her mother taught by her grandmother how to make pasta. They know how to pickle, like, their vegetables. The kids know how to build a fire. They know what foods to pick. They know how to fish. They know how to do all that sort of stuff, which I don't see a lot of kids doing today, you know. And for them, he said, I wanted them to have the basic life skills. And obviously, you know, that's something that you've grown up with as well, as you and your brother.
Yeah, yeah. And I use that a lot more, I think, in my area, like, especially like the cattle farming, like the cattle ranching, like families, because it's a way of both teaching them those skills, and then like you don't have to go outside of your family for labor costs, you know. So it's kind of like a win-win. And then they're good about that. It's a pretty tight community. Excuse me. I think it was last weekend, they have like a big, the area has like a cattle ranchers banquet where they auction off a bunch of items that like go back into the cattlemen's association that they have. And price cattle has been really high, and you could tell by like the amount of money they're throwing around at that auction, but they don't mind doing it because they know it goes right back into the cattlemen's association that benefits all of them. And it's definitely a family affair business. If it wasn't, I don't think it would work the way that it does if it wasn't like a family style business.
Yeah, and I find that, because that's great. I mean, when you go cattleman's banquet, I straight away was just like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. When you think about all the.
It was good food, too.
Yeah, good food, you know, and stuff like that. I could smell those ribs, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's so exciting. But I find that the Chinese do that here, generational family, they try and keep it together. My cousin, she's married into her husband's Chinese, and they have all that as well. And they try to keep the businesses, they try to keep it flowing into the family, and they want to pass things on generational and stuff like that. But it's really difficult. It's not something that a lot of people growing up with and learn to appreciate, because I always want to do something different, you know.
Yeah.
It's like my dad, he was a labourer basically his whole life. He came over to Australia. He was a pizzaiolo, so he did pizzas. Worked in one of the first pizza places that opened up in Melbourne when he was younger. Then he was a plumber as well, but he did bricklaying and all sorts of things. He was a gardener. He worked for the council and all that kind of stuff, and over time. But he loved to work with his hands, and he was very creative as well. But not a lot of us followed a trade. You know, my mum, she became a teacher. She was doing home economics and textiles. So I sort of followed fashion a little bit. But then I used to love to be creative as well. You know, I've had my own soap business where I've made soap. You know, the leather, I just come up with ideas doing stuff. At the moment, I'm kind of juggling around with the photography and stuff like that. But they're just little things that you want to do, you know. I've got my plants outside. I love having a little bit of a garden. Not that I'm a green thumb myself. I'm probably more of a brown thumb than a green thumb. But somehow I've managed to keep these these plants going. So it's been quite good. Yeah, so it's really
either. I'm really thankful that I'm friends with like a lot of my customers are farmers, so that I don't have to be a great one.
Yeah, and do you love the fact that you've got that community as well? Like, that's what I was saying. Like, we have, instead of going to the big supermarkets and stuff like that, we've got a place which is what I call like a barn, really. It's a farmer's market, and it's under a massive shed that you can go and get all your fresh products from. And most of the products you can get from there, you have to eat them within a couple of days because they're that fresh, right? They're not perfect. They've come from the local farmers. They haven't been polished up like they do in the supermarkets, and you don't actually know if it's rotten inside or not, you know. And I love that. And I think I miss that because we used to have that. Like, we had the fruit trees. We had garden in our backyard. Dad had we had about a half acre block, so for in the suburb it was quite big. So we had everything in there, you know, and we could, as kids, just run around and just eat basically from the garden, you know, which is as an adult I kind of miss that. And I remember D-Train saying one time, "Do you remember the fruit trees that used to be planted on the streets?" Right? So as kids, you used to be able to pluck, whether it's an apricot or a plum or whatever it is there, and they remove those fruit trees and they replaced them with some European tree or whatever it is, and it's gone. Like, all that's gone now. It's almost like they don't want you to have that anymore. You have to specifically go and get it from this place. I mean, what do you think about all these shortages that are happening? Like you were saying, like, prices of beef are going up, and we had that issue here as well. Yeah. But now there's this supposed egg shortage, and there's the whole bird flu and all this sort of stuff. What's with these narratives? Have you got an idea of what they could be playing at with this?
It's just probably more about more centralization of control. And then some of it is just like the price of beef. There doesn't seem a shortage of beef. But I talked to the ranchers, and they say that beef futures and people who buy cattle for other things like recreational, like penning and sorting and stuff like that, beef futures, they just keep going up. And I don't understand enough about economics to tell you why that is.
Yeah, me neither. I just thought maybe on your fakery side you might know. So we were chatting before.
All of economics seems fake to me. So as far as I can see, like, as far a lot of it seems to be fake anyway.
Yeah, that's right, and that's what we were talking about prior to jumping on. Is Resmut Jeff and myself, we were through a website called, or a Discord server also called fakeologist.com, and talking about media fakery, and that's where most of us sort of met and had a bit of a chat about what's going on in the world today. But do you, are you finding that that's not really affecting what you do, though, is it? Like the way of the world today is not affecting you that much in ways of your business?
Probably what affects my business cost-wise the most is the price of fuel, which in our state, the West Coast is notoriously, of the United States, has the most expensive fuel. And we have, we're part of like the carbon tax scheme that like it passed a couple years ago. So it taxed like an extra 50 cents a gallon on top of already high tax prices. And then the price of natural gas, because all of our stuff that we work with is made out of steel or aluminum. And in order to manufacture those things, you need natural gas.
Do you think they're doing that just because they want to put a stop to all that natural? So that's what I'm talking about. Like, they just want to put a stop to a lot of things. And there's nothing wrong with natural gas. At the moment, we've seen lithium batteries explode everywhere and causing house fires, factory fires. And it's just rampant with all this stuff that they're putting forward. And I don't know. I'm not a big fan of it. Like, I just think the more natural we can go in going about our business, the better off we'll be. But it seems to be a stop to that.
Yeah, my great grandpa always said that, like, if we got over $2 a gallon per gas, like, he'd just go back to he'd go back to the horse and buggy.
Yeah, why not? I reckon that's a great idea.
Can you hang on a second? I gotta take care of something.
Sure. No worries. All right. So you are in the fitting room with Verilicious, and it is the 4th of February, 2025. And we are talking to Resmart Jeff. He is a farrier. That's his work. So there's a combination of blacksmith skills and some veterinarian knowledge. So that's what he does. And he lives out in central Washington, just on an Indian reservation there. And he has said that we can check out, if you wanted to, guys, have a look at the Yakima Indian Reservation. I think you can have a look online to see what that is and have a little bit of a read.
No matter what your age,
you're listening to Conversation.
Or your affiliation.
On truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage.
And now back to the conversation.
In the art of conversation.
In the fitting room with Verilicious, and we're just going to wait for Resmont Jeff to come back on. He's just got to take care of a little bit of business at the moment. And there okay, we are sorry. Back. You're back.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay. We said you had to take care of business. We're just running through like where people can check out some things about the Yakima Indian Reservation online and so forth. And just having a bit of a chat, like what you do as a business and things like that. So that's quite nice. So what else was I going to ask you today? Your dogs. Oh, my goodness. You put so many pictures of your dogs. I just love it because we have one old boy here who's just turned 14 and he's asleep now. And I just love that they have so much personality. They love being a part of a pack. You know, for me not to work full time anymore and to look after him, it's just beautiful. Like I don't like leaving him. I think Dee's the same. We don't like leaving him by himself, but he's pretty much independent. Like we picked a pup who has his own personality and he doesn't mind being a little bit independent. You know, that's how he was since a puppy. Which is quite nice. Yeah, yeah. But tell us about your dog, because there was an abandoned puppy you had picked up a few months ago, or was it 6 months ago now?
Yeah.
About and you were telling months, us yeah. about her. Yeah. How's she going now?
Oh, she's doing good. She's got a lot of energy. She's smart. She's sometimes too smart. Yeah, she's definitely integrated into the pack. She's doing good.
Yeah, and how many dogs do you have?
I have two. My brother has one, and my neighbors, who are my parents, they have two blue healers.
Oh, okay. So you've got...
And they all kind of, like, ride together.
Yeah.
Yeah, five. And the whole, like, our acreage is all, like, fenced in together. So,
yeah.
And we should have done that years ago. It's like, I would never have dogs now, especially, like, where there's more houses and so much more traffic going in out here, and I'm back away from the road, about a quarter mile away from the road. But it's just nice to have everything fenced in, because we've got plenty of acreage for them to, like, run around and entertain themselves.
Oh, that's so nice. It's beautiful when they can do that. Now, our dog's a bit spoiled. He was born in the country, and then he was raised up in sort of a bit of a city cafe life, which he loved. He's a bit of a cafe dog. No, he's old. And then we moved beachside, and he's more settled beachside. So a few years ago, we noticed he was starting to deteriorate, and he had problems walking. So unfortunately, during COVID, we couldn't get any help except for what we could do online, and you know, through a physiotherapist and so forth. And we got him to walk again. I bought all the right equipment that I needed to help him with, and learned, like, the type of massages and the type of exercises he needed to do. Yeah, and then we moved to Queensland, and he just got better and better. So he's slow, but he's definitely way better than he was a few years ago. So he's still got a lot of life in him, you know. It's just one of those things. Like, I basically would take care of him before I would of myself, in health wise. Like, I would put all my energies in making sure that he's got the best life, you know. So, and that's how I feel about a lot of the animals, like, making sure that they have the best life, and which is what I love about what you were doing for your dogs. So I think that's great.
The same program, like, here, definitely with the dogs and the horses, definitely, like, the horses kind of, they get the same treatment too. They get special minerals and grain and supplements. My mom is in charge of that. That's her department. She does all the research. It's amazing what she does. She's done from so, because the, my dad's last horse, he actually had a fractured knee, and my mom got him healthy enough that he was able to use him again.
That's amazing, isn't it? And it's amazing because we can heal naturally, and animals can heal naturally, and just making sure that they get all the right treatment and care and stuff like that. I think it's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
Nutrition, it is so that nice. Kind of stuff, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that's what we're saying. Like, if you feed yourself something healthy, you want your animals to be healthy as well. And you can see how much they enjoy life as well. You know, we have all the birds and stuff here. And we were like, will you talk to the birds? I'm like, I talk to the birds. I reckon they understand. I think animals, there's a language. You might not speak their exact language, but you can understand them. And if you have that love for nature, you can really pick that up. And that's what I love about that as well. And I can see that you love that as well. Yeah. So it's been great, Resmaja, like, getting to know you well.
Yeah.
Are you a bit of a cowboy though? Do you go to rodeos and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. My dad, actually, he was a professional team roper, and my mom still runs barrels. My dad, he'll rope some still, yeah. Like, team roping, like, I don't know if you know what that is, where one guy ropes the horns and the other guy ropes the back legs.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen a few. We have them here.
My niece,
she has a full outfit when she goes to the rodeos here as well. Her partner, he is... funny enough, it's a place called Austinville at the back of the Gold Coast here. So we do have some farmland. We call the hinterland. So it's more green here, not so much desert, but it is very green. If you go further up at the back past Brisbane and more west of Brisbane, you will hit, like, more like the desert type where it's really, really warm. And that's where we get a lot of our like bushfires and so forth. Further down where we are, further south of down where we are, it's more wet. So we tend to have more of the floods and that really sort of tornado type, you know, monsoony type weather. So it varies. But yeah, look, my niece, I think she's once a month or something, they head off there. They love a bit of that stuff. But I tell you, I haven't been for a long time. I think that's probably going to be something on the cards next time she goes up. Might have to put on the old cowboy shirt and the cowgirl boots.
Nice. Yeah.
But we do have the what's big here is the Country Music Festival. Here in Broadbeach. It brings so many people here. We just had it in October of last year. So every October we have it here and it's massive. It brings people from everywhere. We have people from the United States. We have people from all over Australia. It's just huge, absolutely huge. And I've never seen the biggest Stetson hat in my life until I saw quite a few more cowboys this time around come to town, I should say. And it's really good. It's such a great vibe. The music is good. I was never one for country music, but, you know, little did I know, it was probably something I was exposed to. And then, you know, as you grow up as an adult, you want to be rebellious as a I'm going, no, I'm going to listen to like some punk music, or I'm going to listen to some R&B and all that kind of stuff. But little do you know that like all that stuff is in country music as well. It's quite enjoyable. Yeah. So do you have festivals and stuff like that there?
Yeah, actually, Watershed is a huge. Yeah, I just put up a picture of me riding the horse I was telling you about that had the fractured knee. Like,
yeah,
I rode him too. He was kind of my horse also. But yeah, we have a huge music festival here called Watershed, and it's at the Columbia Gorge, and the Columbia Gorge Amphitheater is like it's kind of like a natural amphitheater that's like down in this gorge. You have to look up pictures of it to really get it, but it's an amazing place. Like the acoustics are like, I've been to concerts several places, and it's nothing like that. Pretty crazy the way that the cliffs of the gorge affect sound.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Like naturally, and that's how they build stadiums, basically copy nature in ways of making sound. So what was that amphitheater called? Sorry, Del.
The Columbia River Gorge Amphitheater.
Perfect.
And they have all kinds of music. They have a lot of music. They during the summer, they have like a lot of electronic music festivals, but then at the end is a big country music festival called Watershed.
And I bet you get more people going to the country music than you would out of the other one.
Yeah.
Out of the other,
and less
any
strange
other.
People because they pass. Yeah. Cause where I live is kind of transit point to the gorge if you're coming from Portland in the south or Seattle in the north, and they stop at like our grocery store on the way over there and see a lot of weird people headed to a lot of electronic music festivals.
I kind of feel like sometimes Byron Bay is like that. You live with their moms. Yeah, I feel like Byron Bay is a little bit like that. I don't know if you've most people would have heard of Byron Bay. It's quite popular here in Australia. It's a little bit bohemian, a little bit hippie, but you're kind of like, there's a few strange things going on there. But all in all, like Byron Bay is beautiful. It is a beautiful place. But yes, it can get a little weird. Yeah. And
yeah,
I think there's two. Yeah. And we have on the spit here, we do have those massive concerts that play couple of times a year, but it does bring a different crowd, and you see the different crowd. Like Gold Coast itself is diverse, right? See, for me, when we used to come up here for holidays, you didn't notice it, but when you live here, it's a whole kettle of fish. And when I was just trying to think back, but when we actually started living here, and I thought, I felt like I stepped back in time, like I was stepping back into the early 2000s, you know, late 90s, just the way the city is here. It's, I say it's a city, yeah. It's a little city, right? But it's right on the beach. And the way people dress, culturally, but each suburb has a different culture. So where I'm in Broadbeach, it's predominantly locals, plus it's very touristy as well. And if you go further down to a place called Burleigh Heads and Burleigh itself, it is a little bit more bohemian, surfy type. Everyone's like, you know, a little bit like a vegetarian and all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of Japanese. And they're not your traditional Japanese. They are the surfy Japanese. So they're a little bit taller. They're quite tan skin. Some of them actually have blonde hair. It's the diversity. Like, you're laughing because you understand, like, when you see the diversity of the different places, you're like, what? You know, it's not something that notice until you live there. Yeah. And I love it. I absolutely love it. My girlfriend, I just caught up with her yesterday. She's like, you're going to come down to Burleigh again. We're going to go and, there's a really nice, vegetarian place. And she's going, you've got to come this day for this meal and all that kind of stuff. And I love it because it is a little bit boho there. People a little bit more free spirited, but at the moment they're building infrastructure here. So, there's rail lines getting put in and stuff like that. So it's affecting a lot of people. But the city is growing, like it's growing. And what they're trying to do is make public transport more available to travel, like from the Gold Coast Airport to Central Gold Coast, to where the city is and all that. Mm-hmm. But, look, the culture here is really nice. You know, the place called Surfers Paradise, it's the same. It's just the name itself will tell you that, you know, surfing is huge here. We do have a lot of international surfers that live here as well. And, it's a great place. Like, you love where you live, and you can talk about it and go, you know, there's so many amazing things you can experience and do here as well. Yeah. So it's awesome.
That sounds like it.
Yeah, guys. Resmut Jeff. Great to have you in the fitting room with Rarelicious. So what did we decide? Cowboy boots and chaps, I think.
Yeah, I could always use a good pair of boots.
That is so funny. Well, thank you for being our guest today in the fitting room with Rarelicious. And just to check out online as well, the Columbia River Gorge Amphitheatre. You guys, if you want to jump online, Google it, have a look. And see what Resmut Jeff was talking about there. And then I think you can also, on maps, have a look at the Central Washington Indian Reservation. So you get an idea of where he lives and what he's talking about when it comes to a place that has, you know, the snow, the desert, the beach and everything else. It sounds like a beautiful place to live as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so thank you so much. But we will catch you again. So, Resmut Jeff, you are a popular person here on Discord. Sometimes you have shows with Esoteric. Is that correct?
Yeah.
We can promote that a little bit as well. Yeah. So, truthmeets.com, you can catch Resmut Jeff with Esoteric. Rick does shows on Rick and Rollo. Is it Rick and Rollo that you normally go on? I'm not.
Yeah,
it's on the Nostalgia Rick Hour. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can catch Resmut. Yeah, you can catch Resmut Jeff
it's
on
like
there.
Late.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like
so if
late
you're up
night,
for a late
on
night
Friday
one,
over here. Yeah.
If you're up for a late one, you can jump and listen to some of the shows on truthmeets.com. One of them is the Rick and Rollo Nostalgia Hour. Be Told as well. As well as Coast to Coast with Beachy and myself, and now in the fitting room with Rarelicious. So, Resmut Jeff, thank you once again for being our guest. I'm sure you've got a few ladies here, a few friends of mine might be interested in coming to visit you, or unless you're going to have to come here and cowboy it up down here. with us here on here on the Gold Coast. But yeah, thank you once again. So everybody, thank you, Resmart, Jeff, for being our guest here today on The Fitting Room with Verilicious. And everyone, we will catch you on the next show. We will see who we'll have next time. Thank you again.
As we sat on the front porch of that old gray house where I was born and raised, stared out at the dusty fields where Daddy always worked hard every day. I think it kind of hurt him when I said, Daddy, there's a lot that I don't know. But don't you ever dream about a life where corn don't grow. Just sat there silent, staring at his favorite coffee cup. I saw a storm of mixed emotion in his eyes when he looked up. He said, son, I know at your age it feels like this whole world is turning slow. And you think you'll find the answer to it all where corn don't grow. Hard times are real. There's dusty fields no matter where you go. You may change your mind, cause the weeds are high where corn don't grow. When Daddy turned and walked back in the house, I was only 17 back then, but it seems like I knew more than I do now. I can't say he didn't tell me this city life's a hard road to hoe. It's funny how a dream can turn around where corn don't grow. Hard times are real. There's dusty fields no matter where you go. You may change your mind, cause the weeds are high where corn don't grow. You may change your mind, cause the weeds are high where corn don't grow.